Now, a word of warning about the next few minutes of the programme, because you will hear some annoying noises. But rest assured, we're also going to discuss how to get rid of at least some of them from our everyday lives. And you may be surprised to hear that turning them down or blocking them isn't always the best way. Adding to them can sometimes help. Lisa LaVia, Managing Director of the Noise Abatement Society, is here. And so is Harry Witchell, who's author of You Are What You Hear and psychrobiologist at Brighton and Sussex Medical School. Welcome to both of you. Harry, I know you've reckoned that you've found the most annoying sound ever. Here, briefly, it is. Yeah, tell us what it was.
That's actually a piece of music, part of the underground noise scene. The artist is Zbigniew Karkowski, and that's for people who are really into their noise.
What are the sounds, Lisa, that people tend to find the most annoying in everyday life?
Well, tonal sounds like reversing beeper alarms people find extremely annoying. Also barking dogs, but mostly noises that they can't have any control over. When there's no social dialogue amongst communities, we find they're even more highly annoyed, even by very basic noises.
We're going to carry out an experiment live on air in a moment with me as the guinea pig, because I know it's possible to measure the irritation value of annoying noises. But just going back to that list you mentioned a moment ago, don't some of those sounds have to be annoying because they basically want to create a reaction in us that says, be aware, be cautious?
That's right. But quite simply, at the Noise Abatement Society, we don't believe that noise pollution is the inevitable byproduct of effectiveness or developing a product. So in other words, there's products that can be very effective at doing their job without also causing noise pollution. And we'll show you an example of one of those later when we do the experiment.
OK, well, I think it's experiment time now, because I am wired up because Harry's been administering various bits of equipment to my left and right hand since the start of the programme. Lisa is going to play an annoying warning sound with which you will be familiar. And then I think her suggestion for what could be a more effective and less annoying alternative. Harry, in the meantime, with various wires and a laptop behind me, is going to measure my body's response. But for this experiment to work, I know I have to stay silent for a few seconds. So, Harry, I think you're going to take over and explain what's going to happen. And at some point, Lisa will then play this sound.
So what we've actually done is we've wired up Julian with two sets of devices. One is we've done galvanic skin conductance, or electrodermal responses. So we're measuring the skin and how much sweat. And we now have a nice little baseline of that, which Julian can see. And we're also measuring the electrocardiogram, which is his heart rate. And that looks like it's running quite high, unfortunately, at the moment. So it's around about 95. It was running at 80 before. And what we're hoping is that with the two different stimuli, we'll get a different heart rate response and a different galvanic skin response. So here's one.
Enough.
Okay. So what we saw was that that did definitely irritate Julian quite a bit. And although it didn't particularly change his heart rate by more than about two beats per minute, two or three, because he already was starting quite high, from an electrodermal response, we saw that there was quite a big increase. That was about 3 or 4 microsiemens. So sorry, 0.3 or 0.4 microsiemens. So we have now seen the first of the responses.
Right. And just on that one, I mean, I'm looking at the lower part of a bar graph. It looks like a bar graph that's effectively moving along the chart.
Yep.
And as you say, when I heard that sound, the pale blue marking did go up quite significantly. And that's what you would expect in that situation.
Yes. So this is meant to be an alarm. It's meant to upset you or irritate you. And indeed, I think it did. And it did have some effect on your heart rate, but it also had quite an obvious sort of alarming response. That's what these electrodermal responses are. In many ways, it's kind of like that moment where you go, what's that? It's the thing that gets your attention immediately, but it can also be irritating.
Okay, I'm going to keep quiet again now because I know Lisa's about to play another sound. So again, over to you, Harry.
So right now, in expectation, your heart rate has unhelpfully gone right up to 97 for a baseline. But what we're hoping is that when the baseline is just a bit lower, which is now it's about 26.3 for galvanic, that should be about right. Your heart rate has gone down into the mid-80s, so that's good. So Right. And so now we've heard this second sound, and once again, we did get a response. Your heart rate didn't go up nearly as much. It only went up by about 5 beats per minute. By contrast, the electrodermal response, that is the measurement of your sort of surprise or what's that, that did also go up and about almost the same. So I wouldn't say that we necessarily had wild success on it, saying that they're both equally attention grabbing, but I wouldn't say that it necessarily was that much different, except that maybe your heart rate was, because it was lower, maybe that was because you were less irritated.
Tell me, Lisa, what's the point we're trying to prove here?
This is an example of a piece of technology, a broadband sounder versus a tonal alarm, where the sounder was doing the job that it was meant to do, which was to alert you because you were in immediate danger, being right in front of, let's say, a moving vehicle or a vehicle that was reversing. But the first sound, the tonal alarm, also ricochets through the environment and also makes it hard for you to understand where the sound is coming from. So not only does it alarm you, it also confuses you, but the sound stays in the environment. In other words, it doesn't dissipate, making it very confusing and distressing for those around you who aren't in danger. The point of the technology is to be effective, but also not cause the noise pollution.
So your argument would be that in the case of those two examples, were I to hear both of them, I, if I was close to the lorry, would get out of the way.
Yes.
But with the second one, it would have less of an impact on those further away who don't need to react to it.
Exactly. And it's a perfect example of developing something effective and fit for purpose that doesn't have noise pollution attached to it as well.
I know you've both been involved in an experiment actually in Brighton, I think, to do with noise and adding noises, but which in theory will actually help our general experience. Explain more about that.
Well, I think the real issue is that there's a breakthrough or sort of a revolution in the last 3 years about how scientists have been thinking about noise. And that revolution is based on the word soundscape. So the soundscape obviously is the overall sound that surrounds us. And one thing that you can, there's a big difference between viewing our external environment as noise filled versus having a soundscape. If you only have noise, your options of dealing with that are either to reduce the source or to build a wall and thus prevent transmission. But with soundscape, not only can you do both of those, but a third option becomes available. You can add to the soundscape, thus making it more desirable or less aversive.
So in Brighton, we worked with Brighton and Hove City Council and Martin Ware, who's founder of Human League and Heaven 17, and Dr. Witchell. And what we did is a controlled experiment on West Street, the city's most raucous clubbing area, and we added a 3D ambient soundscape outside of the club environment so that when clubbers came out, rather than shouting and doing the things that they might normally do associated with antisocial behavior, they sort of chilled out and basically came into this sort of wind-down room, if you will, outdoors, and left the area much quieter.
Okay, we're going to have to leave that conversation there, but thank you very much indeed, both of you, for coming in. And I know already I can see some correspondence coming in about a noise, about various noises, annoying and otherwise. And I shall, meanwhile, stay here wired up for a short period, but will gradually be extricated from these various bits of equipment throughout the rest of the programme. And just to say as well that Lisa and Harry will be talking about this at the Cheltenham Science Festival later this month. You'll find details on our website. And one of the finalists of Radio 4's Material World competition has been researching why some people are more susceptible to annoying noises than others. And you can get tickets for So You Want to Be a Scientist via the You and Yours website as well. Thank you both very much.